old Mr. Google.
Yeah, Mr. Google. We're now recording episode 18
Episode 18,
of
huh?
Intriguing Creativity with Steve Smolinski and Tom Trembath. And
Nice,
of
nice.
course, everything in the world is perfectly smooth. There's no issues to talk about. There's nothing for us to talk about because everything is just wonderful.
Yes, everything today is very wonderful. I can see that because I'm looking out this window that's over by me, and I notice that the sky is wonderful looking out there, and there's all these trees that look like they're really happy about their weather and the wet weather that happened recently. And so they're all grown up and they're all having a good time out there in the weather and bouncing around and so on and so forth. And these flower things that are in the trees are just looking so nice. They're all out there too, blowing around in the breeze and taking advantage of fun time and everything. While you and I are sitting here in this room,
Your room and my room, yeah.
thinking to ourselves that, oh, there are days when it's really an advantage to be like a big tree or a pretty flower.
For sure. And of course, we're looking at storm systems coming in to here on the Pacific Northwest, such that it's going to be like maybe 60 degrees this weekend, maybe up to 60 degrees this weekend. But that is, well, we're still in spring, as much as a lot of folks think it's already summertime because Memorial Day went by. It's like, no, the weather around here still is going to stick by physics and meteorology and astronomy, and we're only so far around in the orbit, and we're only tilted so far. It's still going to come in on us and have us give us a storm and things like that.
Are we going to get a big storm?
Oh, it's going to be big compared to June. It's not going to be big compared to November. But you get that bit of good news where, gee, it seems like it's summer. It's 70 degrees. It's sunny. It's blue sky and all this sort of thing. And it's like, okay, this is going to go on forever. And then you realize if you've been living out here for a while, no, somewhere in June, we're going to have what we call Junuary.
January. Oh, January. Good old January. That's right. And it all goes away all of a sudden.
So I'm already planning.
Takes it away with it.
Well, and this is one of the things that you kind of, once you live in a place for a while, you get to understand how to accommodate what it's like to live there. What I've been doing is I've been getting myself a bunch of tasks that are lined up. But okay, it's going to be cold and rainy. All right, so what am I going to do indoors in a few days? So what can I do? What do I have to do outdoors right now? And it's just basic, the same sort of accommodation that that everybody has to do. But we fall into these habits of stereotypes. Summer is always great. Yeah, not quite. Winter's always bad. Well, not quite. There's realities that get mixed into these things. But of course, where you are, everything is always perfect, right?
Yeah, where I am these days, everything is pretty crappy, actually. That's partly my situation, not so much the place itself. The place itself, actually, as I mentioned as we began talking, looks really wonderful looking outside the window. I'm with you though that I don't think it's going to keep looking like that until it gets to be like spring again. I think that we're in the middle of a break from what's going to happen for a while.
You want to make that a metaphor about the world in general?
Oh yeah, that reminds me of the world in general. And that's kind of partly why I said everything looks kind of crappy to me and to these days. But, It's also, yeah, the world in general, the scheme of what's going on, the scheme of, I can hardly stand to get to see or hear from anybody that I've known a long time and known well, because every single call starts out with, "Oh, this stupid people, what are they doing to the country?" Or some version of that, right? Like, everybody is really upset about what's happening, really upset. Now, I'm pretty upset too, don't get me wrong, but it does get to be at a point where listening to everybody tell you that same story, it does get to be a little old. And okay, how about we find a way to change that story for a while? That would be real nice. How about everything is looking pretty good? Look at all these nice things that are happening all over the place. That would be nice to hear for a while.
This
You know, wouldn't it?
is why I go up and I spend time up in the mountains, because it really comes down to Hurricane Ridge is where I go an awful lot. It's up in Olympic National Park. It's at 5,000 feet. You can't get cell phone service, and it's marvelous to
Oh,
just
you
stand there.
hear those people. It's wonderful.
And you can just stand there and go, okay, yes, there's turmoil. There's serious turmoil that must be resolved. But where I'm standing right here, right now, the noisiest thing is the wind and the birds and the tourists. But you realize that there, in the midst of all this turmoil that's happening down in town, wrapped around it is still what has always been. And that is going to continue happening regardless. Now, climate change is happening and all these other things are happening, but at the same time, for the most part, nature just does not care about us.
No, nature is got its basic things it wants to happen at certain times of the year, more or less, and it likes to keep those things happening the way it wants them to happen, so that the things that nature likes can continue to be doing the things that nature likes, like that you can get nice, sunny, shiny weather, and you can enjoy a day like that because nature likes that. Nature thinks it's fine, particularly all the critters and all of the plants, all like that. And so they work at making sure that we get that weather, and they're pretty good at making sure that it happens.
Yeah, so for where I go is high enough up that this time last month you still needed snowshoes to get around. Now, in the last month, of course, that all melts off. And what I found fascinating was, all of a sudden, you start getting green growth, which is natural. And the critters that come out, the deer and the marmots, who are just going, thank you so much, I have food now, are wild creatures. But when they find a patch of something green, they're willing, and if it's only 6 feet away from you, they're willing to just kind of walk up to you, look at you, and then say, I'm going to eat this because that's more important than being scared of you.
Well, that's kind of interesting because one of the things that I was looking at yesterday when the trees and plants started showing how happy they were that there had been a bunch of rain that fell in the recent past so that they could do all of their coming out of the ground and showing their flowers and waving to the wind and all of that stuff. And what I noticed was happening was I noticed that there was an awful lot of little critters that had come pouring out of the woods, and they were eating at this new growth as fast as they could make their mouths move. They must have been starving for a
Oh,
while.
for sure, yeah.
Well, they were just chomping away on these trees and these bushes and chomp, 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 chomp. And then an interesting thing happened, which I always like. Where I am here, I live very close, sort of, they kind of back up to where I am. Not totally back up, but on the edge of backing up. And there are several families there that live on the edge of what becomes woods.
Yeah.
And outlying lands and stuff. And all of the kids, all of the families that are near to me, that are basically my neighbor kind of people, a little bit farther away, but basically my neighbors, they all have kids. There's three families that live side by side by side down the row there. They all have kids. And what's fascinating about it is they all have girls. All of the kids are girls, all of them. And not only are they girls, but they're little girls. They're all really little girls. And not
That's the way they
only
start.
are they really little girls, but I learned, which I didn't really know before, not having any little girls in my family, I hadn't seen little girls at this age doing the kinds of things I'm seeing now. What these little girls do is they love to run outside and play. They spend as much of the day as they can all the time outside playing, running around. But the interesting thing about it to me is they know the loudest screams
Oh,
that I've
yeah.
heard. These little girls, when they scream, I swear they squeam here, and they hear them all the way around the world to the other side from where. And when I'm in the house, you hear them screaming right through the house. You
Yeah.
hear, and it's all fun screaming, you know, they're
Right.
playing, throwing some balls around, they're doing junk like little kids like to do. They're having great fun because the road there is like a little teeny local road, which is my road kind of, and there's no traffic on it.
Right.
Well, the parents know that they don't have to worry about the kids running out there because there aren't going to be any cars doing anything. And if there happens to be a car, it's going to be one of the neighbors, and the neighbors are going to be going ridiculously slow because they know that there might be some little kids.
Right.
So neighbors are really, really careful. And it's kind of a wonderful playground for the kids. And the kids get the all the a number of the kids had their parents taking care of them, had done this thing to make sure that the kids were fully equipped with stuff to play with. And so they had gotten several of them electric bicycles.
Oh, yeah.
In the midst of all the screaming and in the midst of everything else going on, they're racing around on electric bicycles, screaming at everybody and everything, while they're throwing some stones around with each other, or
Yeah.
some whatever they happen to have picked up
Right.
around.
Right.
And I wander around because I've gotten friendly with the kids. The kids have decided that they like me because I became the guy that if I see a ball starting to roll into a place where I know that the kids are never going to get it,
Yeah.
if it keeps going, I like tootle over and I pick the ball up. And I wave it to them,
All right.
and they all wave back, and they like me now because they know I'm the good guy. I'm the ball saver, you know? And I pick the ball up, and I look around, and I see one that looks like they're in a good target range, and I throw them the
All
ball.
right.
And they're so skilled. They always catch the balls.
Oh, yeah.
They just know what they're doing. So they catch the balls, and then when they catch the balls, the ones that remember to do it all say, Hi, Steve. Thank you, Steve. And they thank me. You know, they're very polite. They're screamers, but they're very polite. And I wave to them, and they wave back to me, and we have a good little time. And every now and then, a parent sticks their head out of a window to make sure that the kids are still okay. And maybe we'll come out and play with them for a few minutes before they have to go back inside and do whatever the adult things are that they're doing. Enough with the kids, you know? And I hang out outside and I wander around for a while and keep watching the kids because I just get so fascinated watching them doing their games while they are screaming their heads off.
So are you finding that folks, considering all the turmoil in town, are you finding that folks are trying to come and move up into your neighborhood?
No, nobody. I haven't noticed anybody that has moved into where I am. I think what's happening where I am is people are moving out. They're moving in the opposite direction.
Really?
Where I am, even though it's a very rural area, it's a very expensive area. It's on the edge of one of the most expensive places you can be in this part of the world. And so the houses here are ridiculously expensive. And so people selling houses have problems because house prices, if you're selling houses, are really high because the people that have to buy your houses don't have the money to buy them. So they seem like they're ridiculously high. So people are not like looking around here to buy stuff
Interesting.
because they all looked at their wallets and said, okay, now there must be some place that it's affordable for me to buy something, and it's not here. So let's keep looking. And they drive down the street to the next area or something, or go to wherever they go. I don't know where they go,
It's
but.
interesting because I know that out here, because I keep shopping for land because I'd like to move. I live in a mobile home park temporarily, and I'd like to buy a piece of land and put a tiny house on it, or a regular house either. But what I'm finding is that there's hardly any land to buy because it's all been snapped up. It's not even that it's expensive, it's the fact that there's hardly any land to buy.
Well, that's the other thing where I am. There's not like a lot of land to buy to begin with. And what there is expensive because it's small plots in wealthy area. And anybody that wants a small plot is kind of out of luck because the prices have gotten bucked up. And the prices aren't really bucked up because of the houses that are here, they're bucked up because everything all around has like quintupled in price and quadrupled in price and whatever the next highest way is. I mean, it's weird. And I don't understand if that's that there is some amazing housing thing going, boom going on that is causing everything within miles of here to just all of a sudden become the most expensive stuff that's been around in, you know, years and years and years. But
Well,
so it
that's
kind of
not just
does,
nationwide, that's worldwide.
well, but it kind of doesn't, oh, okay, but it kind of doesn't matter where you are and what you're looking for. Every time you see anybody that's looking at something, they're grimacing, you know? They're grimacing. And if they see you and say something to you, what they're saying is, how the hell does anybody afford to live here?
That's exactly why I want to get my piece of land because if it keeps,
Yeah.
well, if it keeps going this way, later's going to be too late. And if things collapse, I'd much rather already be there than trying to get there.
Yeah, I think that that's right. I think the part of the other issue is people that are here have figured out, I'm just here. So the best thing for me is just to stay here and the hell with it, right?
Yeah, I
And
mean,
so they're just sitting there watching their kids run around and scream. They're not out there looking at any places for sale. They're just riding the wave that exists and hoping that somehow it will all work out. You know, their neighbor will turn out to be a bazillionaire who loves them and will say, "You know, I notice you're having a problem getting the house. Let me help you." Someone will come and help them buy the house, and then they'll buy a house.
If
But up
that, if
until
only
then,
that was common.
they're not going anywhere up
No.
until then.
No, but it's like if you look at history and you look at where the real turmoil has been during any revolution, whether it's an official revolution or just a great chaos, it's rarely in the countryside. It's almost always in the cities because everything is amplified in the cities because you have the population is amplified. There are more people there. And that's what I'm watching for right now is I know that the during COVID, I coined a term that nobody else uses, but I still like it, which is rural distancing. We talked about social distancing, keeping somebody 6 feet away. But I said, rural distancing because out here, being in a rural county that I'm in, you have acoustic separation, you've got some physical separation, you're rurally distant from the next person. Now, even if I'm in a mobile home park, I've got more room between my house and the next house than a townhouse does in downtown Seattle. And to me, I feel sorry for anybody that's on the 16th floor of an apartment building or condominium complex in downtown Seattle. I just can't imagine. Well, I can imagine being there, and I can imagine not liking it. Whereas here, I go for a walk, and all of a sudden, I can find myself just turning a corner, and I can see trees, and I can see mountains, and I can see water, and I can't see any houses. Whereas to try to do that in downtown Seattle, many, many miles are involved. It's,
Yeah, it's been a long time since I was in downtown Seattle, but I remember the last time that I was in downtown Seattle, it was packed then too. And that was some years ago. It was filled and it was just a mess.
and yet people are drawn to be there. Not necessarily early Seattle, but
They were
people are still
still
drawn to
moving in.
cities.
They were moving in and they were doing whatever they were doing there. And I'm looking at it and saying, why don't they go somewhere nicer and somewhere with more stuff to do and less of this crap stuff all over the
Course,
place,
they've
you
probably
know?
figured that there's more stuff to do because there's more bars, there's more restaurants, there's more stadiums, there's more theaters, there's.
They were looking at a different thing than this old country boy was looking at, that's for sure,
Well,
you know?
and here's one I just hadn't thought about this until just now, but city life is largely spectator life.
Yes.
You're going to a theater, you're going to a restaurant, you're going to a bar, you're going to all these things. Now, you can participate.
It's all the event based, as you're saying, event based. The mu the a movie, the theater, the some big dinner place you can go to, whatever
What
it
is delivered to you?
all a theater base, and it's all expensive. Because all those places are expensive. So even just to go out and get a snack is expensive. Because you're in a place where a snack is like a big deal amount of money to
Oh,
get a decent snack for you and your family.
Whereas, when I go up to the mountains, it takes some effort to get to the mountains. More driving is involved. It's an hour and a half drive from my house, which for some folks is an incredibly long distance. For other folks, that's just next door. And then, really, Hurricane Ridge is so nice that you don't actually have to hike anywhere. But of course, the more you hike, the more you see.
Always.
So it's not a spectator thing at that point. At that point, I'm exerting effort to get out there, which happens to be where the deer are and the marmots, and hopefully not the bear, and hopefully not the cougar, but I know that they're there. They're watching me. They're hiding. But it is a different lifestyle, and I'm waiting to see if
Well,
they're.
just keep waiting. Soon they're going to be coming out from hiding and they're going to be biting on your feet. your problem with them will go away, but you might have a different problem with your feet.
Oh, I've had cougar. I've gone up a trail, a dusty trail, my boot prints on the way up, and on the way back there were cougar prints in my boot prints.
So we were close. Makes you think about what living in the country can mean, depending on exactly where you are and what time of year it is, and how big your neighbors are.
There was one snow trip that I did, you know, so it was a wintertime trip.
Yep.
And there were cougar prints. I wondered how fresh they were. And as I was noticing that, beside them were deer prints.
Huh.
And the deer prints had blood in them. And it was still bright red. Which meant that the cougar was on the deer.
Yep.
And to just realize that, you know, and of course I can understand somebody saying, well, that's exactly why I'm not leaving the city. That's exactly why I'm staying in the city. And of course at that point you're cheering on the cougar, because if the cougar got the deer, then the cougar's not going to come after me.
Yes, exactly.
But that's taking it to an extreme. And that's kind of that's the trend I'm watching for, is to see, you know, urbanization can only go so far. Globalization can only go so far. Any trend can only go so far until all of a sudden there's a backlash.
Yeah.
And considering the turmoil that's happening in town, that's what I'm watching for right now. That's the trend I'm watching for. And it's kind of starting to see some of it, but that's why I was asking you, is because you're obviously in a place that is appealing.
Well, there's the thing about where I am is I'm in a rural area, but where I am is kind of in the more open.
Oh, okay.
And around the sides of it. So while it's rural, and there's a lot of rural stuff there, like the little kids running around screaming all over the place through the streets and stuff that I mentioned, if you go up past the rurally part where I am, and you keep walking in the direction that you took from the really beat up place to get to there, and you keep going in that direction, you wind up getting to out of the real rurally part, and then you're on the edge of the built up part.
Oh, okay.
Once you get to where you're on the edge of the built up part, everything changes, because that's where all the people are that get up in the morning and drive somewhere to go to work.
Right.
And I've watched around a number of times, because I'm kind of fascinated by that way that happens in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And what I've noticed is it's really hard to figure out where they're going to work.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Well, I watch them drive, and I watch them go to certain places, and then all of them stop, and they sort of all disappear, and I look around, and I'm like, okay, now where's the factory?
Uh-huh.
Where's the place they're going to work? And often, I can't figure out where they're actually going, and it's fascinating to me. And then I spent some time doing it one day to really try and figure it out, because it was bothering me. And I followed them. I really followed them for a while, which I guess I hadn't done before.
Right.
And I realized that some of these people are driving really far.
Oh, yeah.
Wherever it is they were.
Sure.
Really driving. And the reason that these houses and stuff are so expensive is because they're driving huge distances to get to these places. So these places are out somewhere where the land is a lot more valuable.
Well, it's also more affordable, too.
You got to be buying big pieces for lots of money, or smaller pieces for still lots of money.
Yeah, in Washington State.
And then you got to be thinking to yourself, and every day I'm going to be spending all this time in a car driving way over there to get to this place that looks like a place where I could work.
In Washington State, there is more than just, and I'm sure this is true in other states as well, but so many times the conversation is about urban versus suburban versus rural.
Yep.
In Washington State, another way to look at it is there are places where the normal lot size is 100 acres, and then as you get closer in, it's 20 acres.
Yep.
Then it gets down to 5 acres, 1 acre, and then a few thousand square feet. And actually, there's two subsections within that, which is enough square footage so that you can have a house plus a septic, and then it's like only 5,000 feet if you can be on sewer. So rather than the country versus rural thing versus urban thing, that's the other way to distinguish it. Because when I'm going from where I live right now to the up into the mountains, I go through all of that. And of course, the ultimate is the national park, which is not 100 acres, it is square miles.
Yep.
And it's fascinating to me to kind of watch that, because you can see the way the houses change and the way they get more and more spread out. And part of it is regulation, and part of it is infrastructure. Part of it's because folks want to be that distant from their neighbors.
Well, a lot of people go out into the country because they really don't want to have neighbors.
Right.
They want to have space, and they're willing to pay for what it costs for them to get space so that they can have the lonely life of doing whatever they want there and not worrying about the neighbors yelling at them and stuff.
Well, and now it's more feasible to do that, because before it used to be you were out there, you were in the sticks, you were isolated from everything.
Yep.
But now if you've got solar power and cell phone service and you've got Starlink for internet, you've got an on-site septic system, you large part, if you've got a well, if you've got a supply of water, you've got everything you need. Just got to maintain the roads so you can have that one tenuous connection back to civilization.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I think about it. When I spent all the years I've spent living way, 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 way up in the middle of nowhere, where everything was non-electric. You had a heat with wood that you chopped yourself up the road, you know, and there was no water. The water lines or electric lines. You had to make all that stuff work for yourself. And you know, I got really used to that, and I really liked it a lot, and lived there for years, and had a great time, and it was lots of fun, and get used to the critters, and you get used to the very few people that you see in places like that, because
yeah.
most people don't have any vehicles that will get them even remotely to those places, because those are the places that have the snow that's really deep all year round.
Those are the sort of places that, as much as I will make fun of Hummers and all these other really monster trucks,
yep.
There are people I know who actually need that kind of a vehicle.
I was one of them. I had one of those vehicles, and if you didn't have that, you did not get to where I lived. And worse than that, if you got there, you didn't get out from where you lived there, right?
Right.
And it was really kind of interesting to live there. Myself and another guy, we had this big cabin that we had out there. So we were there, hanging out, being the tough guys out in the middle of nowhere, and you know, it was great fun. We liked it a lot. We did a lot of interesting things. I spent most of my life up in the most highest northwest part of the country, working for big senior executives that were running companies up in outer space, basically.
Yeah.
Coming down. It was an interesting place to be living. So I was wandering around myself trying to get to people and stuff up there. But, you know, I got a kick out of it. I liked being there, and and the country and the people, and it was a lot of fun.
But you know, the other limiting factor for
one thing I liked about it was that because the two of us were way up there, and we understood that when you live in a place like that, and every single place is covered with snow, and every place that's pretty close to making it possible to get to it from where you are is a snow resort.
Right.
You ought to be careful.
Yep.
Because that means there's an awful lot of snow that's going to be soon.
But you know, the other thing that starts to happen is
ski people, for some reason, all seem to come from places where they don't know about the snow first place.
Yeah.
So we would be living there.
We've talked before about the folks that go up your street and would get stuck. But you know, as we get older, the other issue though comes up to the fact that I don't know about for you, but even for me, I'm within 7 miles of a resort town.
Yeah.
That has a hospital. But as soon as you go a little bit further out, you start running into problems where if you're over 60 and you need the hospital, well, if you're at any age and you need the hospital, there, that I think is one of the limiting things, where the support, the emergency support, getting a doctor out to you or getting into a doctor, getting to a hospital, at some point you really are cutting yourself off too much. And I wonder if that's actually what's limiting that trend.
Well, where I am, it's a real trek to get to the good hospital. You can get to the little local hospital or two, which are a pretty good trek, but you can get to them. But they're little hospitals. They're not the ones that have the doctors you want if you're really in a bad shape.
It's hard to get the specialists out there, yeah.
You want to go to the place where the guys really know what they're doing if they've got to start taking a knife out and cutting into your body somehow. Those are tough.
Or if you need the multi-million-dollar diagnostic machine.
There's just not enough business around to keep them in business, you know?
Right.
Because the stuff that happens tends to be more local stuff, and the more local stuff doesn't tend to need people like that.
So do you have a service out your way called Life Flight?
Life Flight.
Yeah. Life Flight is a service that's out here that is a paid-for service where you are more likely to be helicoptered to the hospital that you need to be helicoptered to.
Oh, interesting, interesting.
Helicopter
people from where I am that get helicoptered to places. That absolutely happens. But the helicopters are just there, and they somehow get picked up by whoever the people are that oversee that kind of medicine, the emergency heavy-duty medicine that actually has helicopters,
right,
and that kind of stuff. Because if you don't have them, particularly when it gets towards winter, you aren't getting anywhere to see any medical stuff.
And see, that's the advantage of the helicopter thing, is for the more remote locations, if you've got a helicopter, you don't have to worry about the roads being plowed.
That's exactly right. You can get there and you can come in. And one of my neighbors is one of the guys that runs some of that.
Oh.
So he and I have had a lot of conversations about what it's like when he's getting all these people up in the middle of nowhere and has to get them out there on weird kinds of transportation and weird weather is going out there, and you need a helicopter or two helicopters depending on where you're going, and you need this and that and the other thing, and you start to think about all the people that live there all the time and are stuck in this stuff, and then they get big problems, and you hear about it because the families talk about it, right?
Right, sure.
They say, well, we tried to drive Johnny up to wherever, and we got a little distance, and we realized that this wasn't going to work, so we started calling around, and we got somebody that said, oh, you've got to call the emergency guys that have the heavy-duty equipment stuff, and they'll get you out of there. And that's what you do. You call the emergency guys with the heavy-duty equipment, and they come and they get you, and they haul you out of there. and haul you as far as they have to haul you to get you to some place where the right kind of people are there. And that's kind of a weird place to be if you're nervous.
I lived
for a long time in a place that was like that, where we spent some significant part of the winter hauling out the stupid tourist people that didn't understand that when you're on one of these rural roads that is covered with snow, and you get to the place where it says road closed, mm-hmm. do drive farther,
right,
you stop,
right,
yeah, you keep driving in your center city Philadelphia little vehicle that you have,
right,
it will not get you out,
right.
It's amazing it got you in, that you moved enough to get to a spot where it was in. And then what they would do is they would realize that they were totally stuck. And they would walk out of wherever they were stuck. They would walk a little bit, and they would start going down the hill, because everybody had figured out that if you go down the hill in that direction, yeah. you get to where you're liable to get where there's people,
right.
you know? Yeah. And yeah, that's because you could see that there were some buildings out there,
right.
and they weren't the buildings where you were now. And so they would start going down, and the first thing that they would come to was my little cabin.
Yeah, you've talked about that in the past.
They would knock on the cabin.
Yeah. So in terms of intriguing creativity and folks hunting for solutions, then
these stupid people.
So in terms of intriguing creativity and folks hunting for solutions. I mean, do you think that's going to be happening more or less? Are folks going to be turned away from it? Or are they going to find ways to actually survive all of that? Or is it just not going to change?
I have no idea. I think that we have a country that is completely filled with people that are way less knowledgeable and educated and intelligent than they need to be to live in the places that they live.
Okay.
That's my theory about it, because I watch some of these people and I say, these people have good jobs in big companies, and look at them, look at what they're doing.
Well, they've had to learn a different set of skills.
That's stupid, though, and be doing what they're doing and complaining about it and I just don't understand it.
I mean, you think about it, they see the ads and they know what their day-to-day existence requires. There's certain skills they need to have and keep their job.
Yeah.
Which could be, like we were just talking about, before we started recording, setting up a conference call. Yep. And they may have finally figured that out, and they haven't figured out that what they see in the ads is an ad.
Right. Right. That's right. Some advertising agency made that up. That was not put there by somebody that actually lives there and knows what it's like to be there.
I look at some of the ads where there's a four-wheel drive that's bombing across some street, whether it's a desert street or a mountain road or things like that, and I'm going, I do not want to be on the road with that person.
Right?
I mean, I'm used to going up some roads where you're using the horn not to honk at people in traffic, but because the turn is one lane wide, you can't see around the hairpin turn, and it's common courtesy to honk the horn, because otherwise you might have a front-end collision at a hairpin turn where both of you do not want to hit reverse. But it's a different sort of thing. It's a different reality than what is shown in what sells somebody a $100,000 SUV.
Now, in the old days, it used to be that most of the people that were up there living in the places I live, they all had grown up more or less in the area, and they understood what the landscape was like, because they had known about those kinds of snow places and little snowed in cabins with with outhouses that you had to use in the winter, and they had known about that stuff. So they actually had some understanding of what they were getting into and knew what you just said, knew about if you're going to go to that kind of a place, you better have your vehicle properly equipped and you better have some equipment to take care of you to make sure that this would all work. Now what they get is they get people that grew up in big country houses somewhere and their family never did anything outside except maybe go out and take a walk in the spring. And they don't really have any understanding or any clue of what it is really like to be in the wilds.
My dad was brought up in a coal mining town.
And oh, so he knew.
And coal mining towns, lots of twisty, tiny little roads. And he said there was no need for a speed limit sign.
Right.
Because if you were driving too fast, it wasn't that the cop was going to pull you over. It was that the wrecking truck was going to pull you out.
Yeah, that was me. I was the wrecking truck.
There you go.
It just used to amaze me so much, because I would always ask the person that was looking for help. I would say, "Didn't you notice the big sign that said the road's closed for the next like 300 miles? Right. Do not go this way. It's all snow all the way to the other side."
Yeah.
And they would say, "But I have a map."
Uh-huh.
And I would say, "Oh, that's nice. Show me your map." And this would be somebody from Connecticut. They always came from like Connecticut or someplace like that. It was really strange. And the person would show me this map, you know, the typical little trail map that you could get at a little local store. They would show me the map, and I'd look at the map, and I would say to them, I learned that the first thing to say is, "Did you read the map?"
Mm-hmm.
And they would say, "Yeah, I read the map." And then I would have to ask them, "No, my question was, did you really read the map and look at it and see what it says? Or did you just like read a picture somewhere?" And they would say, no, "We looked at the map and the map says that this road goes through. See, look, here's a picture of the road going through." I said, "Like I said, you didn't read the map.
Right.
You looked at a picture that shows it going through. The picture does not say on it, this is only after the biggest thaw time of the year when all of the snow has melted, then you might be able to get through on this trail to the ski place. But you probably can't unless you have a super duper vehicle that is designed to be run in this kind of land."
And it's called a snowcat.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I had something that you could drive there.
And of course, the modern equivalent is if GPS says you can do it, you can do it.
So that's
why people drive off of ferry terminals, because there's a dotted line on the map.
Well, that's it. Yeah. And I would just laugh at these people, and I would say, "Listen, next time, let me tell you something. There are vehicles that are designed to enable you to drive on one of these kinds of roads with snow and suffer. There are vehicles for that, because there are people that live in these places all the time, and so there are needs to get in and out people, and so there's vehicles that can do that. And now what you want you to do is put your map down and look over here. This is my car right here I'm showing you. I want you to look at this. You see it?" And the guy would say, "Yeah, I see it." I said, "Do you see what that looks like?" He would say, "Yeah, that's like a pretty tough vehicle, isn't it?" I said, "Yeah, you're damn right, that's a pretty tough vehicle. Notice how different it looks from the one that you're driving in." He said, "Yeah, mine doesn't look like it has much going for it." And you know, I'd say, "Yeah, now you got it. Get one like mine, and then you can drive where you just drove. I don't recommend you do it, because you don't have a clue how to drive it, and you don't understand anything about the country there."
Well,
so it'll still be bad for you.
Well, and there are
But
still places where
you won't
you.
get stuck the first 10 minutes that you're there like you did this trip.
And around here, there are places where even with the best four-wheel drive or even six-wheel drive, the local authorities are not going to drive across it because it is going to be closed for 6 months out of the year.
Well, that's it. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not like you see lots of other vehicles there. Yeah.
And there's nobody else up in the mountain. I mean, those
like
mountains.
That. It's crazy.
Yeah, because here we have mountains where there is nobody up there.
Well, that's that's by me. There's nobody else there because you can't get there. And if you get there, you can't get anywhere else. So what are you going there?
So what you do is you celebrate the fact that we're at the tail end of spring and about to go into summer.
Yep. and you hope that pretty soon it'll be swimming time and you'll be able to just swim out.
Well, so say you. Here the weather, the water never warms up, so. Okay, guy, I think we've gone on far enough. I'm getting close enough to lunch that I want to get to something to eat. Anything
yeah,
else you want to say before
to eat lunch.
Yeah, anything else you want to say before we close out?
No, I think we gave this enough of a workout for people to listen to a little countryside humor.
Yeah, really. One of these days we're going to find that we have to live in town for some while and all of a sudden our perspectives are going to change. Well, in the meantime then, folks, thanks for listening in to Intriguing Creativity, episode number 18, with Steve Smolinski and Tom Trimbath.
Yeah, it's always fun to have you guys around. Thank you for listening. Appreciate it. Hope you tell all your friends how wonderful we are. What the heck? We like to have people come and listen to us, and we like to have people tell us what they think, so feel free to send us your note about how you liked what we said today, what you didn't like, anything else you want to share with us. We love hearing about it. And we look forward to seeing you again on our next show. And tell your friends. Don't forget. Tell your friends. We like all the new people we can get sticking their heads in and giving us a few little words of their thoughts about things. So thank you. Enjoy yourself. Have a good week. Be careful when you're out there in the lousier parts of the countryside around here. You heard about some of them today, so you know what we're talking about. And have fun when you are out there, wherever you get to and whatever you're doing. Enjoy yourself, because the country is a beautiful place to roam around and see what you can see and talk to some of the local people and all that kind of stuff. So enjoy it. Enjoy it when you're here. Don't get too scared by the crap that we mention. It is there. It is true. But at the same time, it's not going to kill you if you're careful. So just be careful and watch yourself. And we hope that we see you on a following trip that you make down to listen to us.
Say goodbye, Steve.
Goodbye, goodbye, and thank you.